We're continuing the book of Shoftim, and we were learning about the man named Manoach. The angel came and told him that his wife would have a child, even though they had been barren for a long time. His wife's name was Hatzlol von Nis, and she should be careful during her pregnancy not to eat grapes, and when the child's born, not to feed him grapes or wine or cut his hair. And when the child is born, he grows up, he has this long hair, he is crippled with both his legs, he is exceptionally powerful, and he has seed that's like a flowing river. It's like non-ending. And Shimshon goes down a mountain to an area called Timnas, which is in the middle of a mountain, and he sees a woman. And he tells his parents, "I saw a woman there from the Philistines. I want you to take her as my wife." What Shimshon knows is that the Jewish people are not powerful enough to take on the Philistines head on as an army. He has to start his own vendetta against them. And he has to do it in a way that the Philistines won't come back and take revenge from the Jewish people. So he's looking for a way to start up with them. So he figures, let's find a way to start contact with them. You start contact, we'll move forward. Now, this was part of Hashem's driving him to do his job to fight the Philistines. Now, his parents, they don't understand that. And they say, "There are so many good Jewish girls. What are you doing?" So Samson says, "No, she's the one that's right in my eyes." And our sages say that even though on one level he was going to do Hashem's work, on another level, he was attracted, because he says, "She's the one that was straight in my eyes," meaning he did take in her looks, and he was attracted by her looks, and that's why, even though he was a tremendous person, and he was a tremendous tzaddik, but in this he sinned, and in this, meaning, there was a dual nature to his act here. On one level, what he did was right, on another level, it was wrong, and that's why he had his eyes gorged out at the end of his life. His parents were the leaders of the Jewish people. They couldn't imagine what was it. So Maimonides writes that she converted. And Samson goes down with his parents to Timnas. They come to the vineyards. His parents show him, "Look how the Philistines grow their grapes. They crossbreed. They can't even keep a grape as a grape. Everything is all mixed up by them. You'll marry a woman. You think she'll be faithful to you? You can't assume she'll be faithful to you. The Philistines can't keep any of their seeds the way they should be." So he insists, being that it's a vineyard, and when a person walks through a vineyard, it's very natural to pluck a grape and throw it in your mouth. So Samson is extra careful as a nazir. That's a concept we learn from this verse, that he doesn't put himself in temptation's way. He goes around the vineyard. He doesn't go through the vineyard with his parents. And as he's going around the vineyard, so a young lion attacks him, and he tears him in two. He has no weapons. He doesn't even bother telling his parents what happened. He goes down and finds out about the woman, talks to people in the neighborhood, and hears that she's a good person. And so Shimshon likes the idea of marrying her. And then he comes back, and he goes to see, on his way down, he goes to see the carcass of the lion. Now, bees always like blonde and red hair. Those of you who are blonde or redheads, you know that bees are always attracted to your hair and your beard. He finds that the bees have made a hive inside the lion, and he takes out some honeycomb, and he brings it down to his parents, and he doesn't tell them where it came from. This is part of Samson's modesty. And when Shimshon comes down there, so he makes a party, and they bring him friends, and They bring people who are supposed to act as his friends. And Samson tells them, "Let me tell you a riddle. You have 7 days of this party. If you figure it out, I'll give you 30 suits and 30 blankets. And if you don't figure it out, you'll give me 30 suits and 30 blankets." So what's his riddle? Yes.
Wasn't there a problem with the honey being inside the lion's carcass and it would become taref?
Not taref, but tamei. Yeah, you're saying to me.
It would be non-kosher. It
would be
inside a non-kosher animal.
No, I don't think so, because the animal's dead. So if you would open up a lion's stomach and find some honey, that would be one question. But if bees came and made their beehive inside the carcass, so then it's defiled, but it's not a non-kosher.
Well, if you took some honey off a pork steak,
If the honey were smeared on the lion, I'd hear what you were saying. And even then, if it's not hot, it's only a question of the grease that's mixed in the honey. Meaning if you had, let's say you had a clean piece of ham without any grease, theoretically, and some honey spilled over it and then trickled into your tea. So that tea could be kosher, theoretically. If my only issue is that there are always juices that come out that mixed in with the honey. But not here, you have a beehive that was created inside the right. So I'm saying so. That he probably saw that was clean of any of the juices from the lion. It's still disgusting, say there.
Yeah, but even if it was on the lion, the honey's very thick, so only the bottom layer is going to be.
Could be, right.
What was the significance of the honey in the lion?
Oh, that's a good question. So some commentaries want to say that this shows us that there was something missing by Shimshon that God held against him. That it goes hand in hand that a man who isn't disgusted from taking honey from a carcass can marry a Philistine girl. Meaning Chazal are coming, the Navi is coming to show us that in essence this was all held against him. That as great as Shimshon was, these were points that the Navi is purposely pointing out to us that he was not right on these points. There are commentaries who go that route, right?
What's the significance dafka of honey in a lion?
So that I don't know. That I don't know. So Shimshon tells them his riddle, and the riddle is, from the consumer came out food, and from the powerful one, the brazen one, came out sweets. So the consumer is the lion, and the food that came out is the honey, and the powerful one is the lion, and the sweet is the honey. So they can't figure it out. They come to his wife, and they tell her, seduce your husband, otherwise we're going to burn you and your father's house. What'd you bring us here to wipe us out, to clean us out? So she spends the 7 days of Sheva Brachos telling him, you don't love me, you hate me, you gave my nation a riddle, you didn't even tell me what the answer is. So he tells her, I didn't even tell my parents, meaning they were right there when I had the answer to the riddle. And they even ate from the answer to the riddle, and I didn't tell them what's going on. Why should I tell you? You see, I'm not telling anyone. And she keeps crying for 7 days. And on the seventh day, she's driving him crazy. Chazal say, how did she drive him crazy? At the end of intimacy, just when he was getting into it, she'd pull away from under him. So he'd never have satisfaction being with her. And so finally he caves in and he tells her the answer and she tells her people. Now, we all know that at the end, Samson is going to fall at the hands of a woman. He's going to tell a woman his secret and that's going to be his demise. And perhaps part of the story we're seeing here is that he's already being taught at the beginning of his career. Look at what happens. You tell your secrets, and they spill the beans over to the Philistines, and he didn't learn his lesson. So the people come, and they tell him, gee, what's sweeter than honey, and what's more powerful than a lion? And he says, if you didn't plow with my calf, you wouldn't have figured out my riddle. You guys were improper with my wife. So he goes down to Ashkelon, a Philistine city, and he kills 30 Philistines, and he takes their clothing, and he gives it to the people who told the riddle, and he's all upset. He goes back to his father's house. Now, for Noahides, you don't have marriage and divorce the way Jews do. So, from her perspective, he left. He left. He left me by my father's house. It's over. So, what does she do? She takes up one of his buddies and moves in with him. So, a year, 2 years pass. She's been away for a long time. She's right in thinking it's over, it would seem. Shimshon comes with a gift and he says to his father-in-law, let me go see my wife. So her father says, no. Her father says, gee, I thought you hated her. I thought it was over between you two. So I let her marry your friend. but she has a younger sister who's much better than her, go marry her instead. So Shimshon says, this time the Plishtim will hold nothing against me, because now I'm really going to hurt them. And Shimshon does something that's very, very powerful against the Philistines. They have all their crops growing, everything's dry, it's the end of the summer. And you know, here in Israel, all summer long, it doesn't rain, so the crops are super dry. And that's why that's the new method of terrorism that's going on in this country now. That at the end of the summer, toward the summer months, they make fires to threaten Yishuvim, and that's the fire in Haifa. It's well known it was a terrorist who did that. Many.
I was on the roof of the Machon because there was smoke everywhere, and the air was like really thin. It was very hard to breathe up there, and it turns out like a guy tried to set fire to the place by the Tachon HaMerkazi, like a little far, you know, a little far, but the smoke was everywhere.
Yeah, that's their new terrorism today. So the first one to do this terrorism was Samson. Samson takes hold of 300 foxen. He sets out traps. So this took him a few days, right? He catches 300 foxen. The uniqueness of a fox is that a fox has a special collarbone, you know. It could turn all the way around to look and see who's chasing it. It could turn its head many more degrees than other animals. And when the fox runs away, the fox doesn't run in a straight path. It runs in a zigzag. So he ties the foxen into 150 pairs. He ties their tails together. And he puts a torch in between their tails. Now, each one tries to pull in his direction to run away from the torch. And the torch lights the fields of the Philistines. And all their crops are destroyed. Imagine how they need this food for the winter. And now, it destroyed their granaries, it destroyed their standing wheat, it destroyed their orchards, it destroyed their vineyards, it destroyed their groves. Everything was destroyed. So the Philistines see a massive fire, and they didn't have fire trucks in those days. So they asked, what's going on here? They say, oh, Shimshon, the son-in-law of the Taimani, the guy from the south, because he gave away his wife. So the Philistines came, and they did exactly what the original threat was. They burnt down the house with the father and the girl inside. They killed him that way. So Shimshon said, if you would have only done this earlier, now you do this, I'm not done yet. So he goes and he starts beating them up. And he goes down to a cleft in the rock called the cleft of the rock of Etam. Yeah.
I didn't get the whole deal of the foxes. You wanted to set the fields alight.
Right.
I feel like the first thing comes into your mind, and you think, how am I going to set the fields alight? All right, I'm going to catch like 200 foxes and then pair their tails and tie them together. Why didn't just go and light it himself or whatever? It would be much quicker.
So our sages say there was a message here. That he took the fox because the fox turns back, both with its head and the way it runs, to indicate that the Philistines had turned back. They had reneged on their promise that we read in this week's parasha. We'll read again next week's parasha, that they promised Avram and Yitzchak, we won't turn against your kids for three generations, you don't turn against us. And we respected our end of the deal. We didn't attack the Philistines. We waited until King David, because there were still Philistines around that were third generation from then. And we still had Jews who were third generations around, and they didn't respect their end of the deal. You see, it worked. You see, it worked. I don't know. I don't know. You see, it did work. So the Philistines take their camp and they go up to camp against the tribe of Judea. And the tribe of Judea says, what do you guys want? We're not fighting. We're paying our taxes. What do you guys want? So they say, we came to bind Samson, to pay him back, to treat him the way he treated us. So the tribe of Judea sent 3,000 men to that cleft of the rock of Etam. And they said to Samson, with all due respect, you know, don't you know they're in charge? What are you doing? So Samson said, I just paid him back the way they paid me. They burnt my wife, I burnt their fields. So they say, okay, we're not arguing with you. We just want to tie you up and give you over to the Philistines. So he says, just promise me you won't hurt me. So they say, fine, but we will tie you up and give them into their hands. We won't kill you. So they take two new ropes and they tie him up and they bring him up from the rock. Now, when he came to a place called Lehi, so the Philistines shouted, they're thrilled, they got him. So the Jews leave him there bound, and the Philistines are approaching to take him over, and the Spirit of Hashem settles on him, and the ropes that were binding his hands became like flax that was singed with fire, and it was like they melted off his hands, and he's free. So he's standing there, they're all armed, thousands of Philistines, he's got nothing. So he looks around, and he finds a jawbone of a donkey, and he starts beating him up. And he kills them one after another. They can't touch him. So imagine a guy that's as broader than this room. He's got a jawbone, you know, that's his weapon. But he's got far-reaching hands. So he killed 1,000 Philistines and the rest ran away. And there were piles of corpses lying around. And he said, boy, with one jawbone, bilchia chamor, with the cheek of a chamor, with the jawbone of a donkey, chamor, chamor, time. I made piles. The word chamor could mean a donkey. Chamor could also mean a pile. I made piles of corpses. I killed 1,000 men with one jawbone. And then he tosses the jawbone. What?
Was it Philon's donkey by any chance?
I don't know. I'm unaware of a midrash that discusses whose donkey it was.
There was a movie, he'd take the sword of the first guy he killed.
Ah, that's true. So you see here, he didn't bother with that. If the Talmud tells us his shoulders were so wide, I assume his hands were long too. Makes sense. So he tosses the jawbone, which is another thing to think about, that he tosses the jawbone. He used it, he finished using it, tossed it. And this is, we're seeing a recurring theme with Samson. In the first case, he leaves his wife for 2 years. In the second case, he tosses the jawbone he just used. We're going to see this going time and again. The carcass, you killed the lion. Why don't you take the hides? It's not a cheap thing, a lion. You could sell the meat, you could sell the hides. You're going to the Philistines, he leaves the carcass lying there. We're going to see this. He starts getting thirsty, and he calls out to Hashem and says, after such a great salvation, I'm going to die of thirst, and then the Philistines will take me down. So Hashem made a spring open up in the jawbone of the donkey, and water comes out, and he drinks from that, and he names the place Eina Kore Asher Balechi, the spring that came for prayer over here by the jawbone. And the Navi tells us he judged the Jewish people for 20 years, and it's going to tell us that again. So we'll run through the end of the story. He goes to Aza, and he finds a woman of ill repute there, and he's with her. And when the Philistines hear that, they come and surround the city at night. And in the middle of the night, he gets up, takes the doors off. They assumed that the doors would keep him locked in the city. So he takes the two doors with the doorposts and the bolt, and he takes them up on the mountain that oversees Hebron. And then he goes to a woman named Delilah or Delilah, which again, in Tanakh, people's names are not always their names. Sometimes the name is to give a certain meaning. It doesn't always mean that was their name. Chazal will very often tell us that wasn't really the name. The name was something totally different. But that was a nickname that the Navi gives them. It represents what they're supposed to do. You know, this is a tool that's used in a lot of literature. Right.
Does it happen also in
non-Jewish literature too?
In the Chumash?
In the Chumash, sure. What was Moshe's name? Tuvia. What was Moshe's name? Yekutiel. What was Moshe's name? Avigdor. He had a lot of names. He had 10 names. What was Pharaoh's name? What was Pharaoh's name?
Ramses.
What? No. Pharaoh's name was... I forgot. He had another name. That wasn't his real name. So Pharaoh, you'll say, was the name of president. But, you know, like president, king, Pharaoh. There were other people. Throughout Tanakh, the names were not really their names.
Esau's wife's name was Yehudit or something.
Right, her real name was not Yehudit, but she was nicknamed Yehudit. Correct.
Why didn't Shimshon just kill out all the Plishtim and get rid of them?
A one-man show, he couldn't do that.
He did.
No, that's, he did what he could. So, this, okay. So, this woman, Delila, is called Delila because Delila means to wear down. And she's going to wear him down. Now, whether Delila was Jewish or not is a disagreement among the commentaries. Whether she was a Jewish woman who wore him down and gave over her secrets to a Philistine or a Philistine woman. So the Philistines don't have a king. They have five governors. So the governors come to her and tell her, you seduce him, find out how he's so strong and how we could bind him and torture him. We'll each give you 1,100 silver coins. And she tells him, tell me where you have such great strength. How could I afflict you? So he says, each time he tells her a different story. Tie me up with 7 fresh ropes. So she calls the officers. They try it. They're waiting in the other room. She tells him the Philistines are here, and he breaks off as though it was nothing. And she says, you were joking, you lied to me. Tell me now. So he says, okay, if you put me with new ropes that were never used for work, then I'd become ill. She tries that, and again, she tells him the Philistines are here, he breaks free. She says, you keep lying to me and joking with me. So he says, fine, you take the 7 locks of hair, and you put them through the loom, and then I'll be bound. So she does that, and she takes spokes and knocks the loom into the ground, and she tells him the Philistines are here. So he jumps from his sleep, and he drags along. The loom goes flying, and he's like, where? Let me at him. So she says, how could you say you love me? You're not telling me 3 times. You kept telling me lies. You're not telling me. So that, when I was younger, I thought so too. But, and this leads us into our next class, into our Bnei Avayit class. The nature of a woman is that she's curious, and it doesn't necessarily mean that she's trying. In all lore, you see that. It's a recurring theme, be it Aladdin, everywhere, that he trusts her and she gives away his secrets, right? Women are always interested in finding out, and then they tell it over. You see it. Even in the story of the Garden of Eden, you see, she's going and talking to the serpent about the forbidden fruit. And he told her, don't eat it, and she goes and eats it. It's a recurring theme that the husband warns his wife, don't do A or B or C, and she does it. Or he tries to keep a secret from her, and she finds out, and then she spills the beans. It's a recurring theme in life, in humanity. So I'm not sure Shimshon had true reason to suspect. But you know what? In situations of... when a person is being taken by their desires, so then people fall for a lot of things. And you just have to look at the media. Every year you have another great story like that. I don't have to give you the stories, you know them better than I do. So it's in the media, right? So she does the same trick as first wife did to him. Every time he's about to get really excited with her, so at the end of their intimacy, she'd pull out from under him and he'd find himself frustrated. So he's really, really fed up with life, and he finally spills the beans. And he tells her, I never had my hair cut, I'm a Nazir, I'm dedicated to Hashem from my mother's womb. If I were shaved, I'd lose all my strength. So she sees he told her everything. She calls in the Philistines. She says, this time I got it. They bring her the money. She puts him to sleep on her laps, and she has his head shaved off, and she starts teasing him. And he gets up, and he doesn't have strength. And she says, the Philistines are here. And he gets up from his sleep, and he's sure he has the strength he had before, and he doesn't realize that he doesn't. And we'll pick up here. Bezat Shem next week.